Hello, everybody, and welcome to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. I am your host, Daniel Kerbine, and this is being listened to on KBBF FM out of Santa Rosa, California. Actually, it's out of Calistoga, California, and broadcast from our studios in Santa Rosa, California. Also, you may be listening to this at the Blog Talk Radio podcast, which is www.blogtalkradio.com. And look when you get there under Shift Shapers. We also have a Facebook page. Guess what? It's Shift Shapers also. Now, who I'm talking to here? I'm talking to Annabelle Asher, who is otherwise known to many, many of you. And there will be even more after you hear this interview, because you will probably go to www.frugalplanet.wordpress.com. which is where you will find Annabelle's blog. And it is about the frugal goddess. And we'll get into some of that. And there's some things that have outgrown from being frugal, what led to all this. And we're going to get to that here in a second. But also you can look for Frugal Goddess on Annabelle's Facebook page and find links to the latest blogs and different subject matter. Now, Annabelle, welcome to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Yes. And the reason why we talked a little bit and it looked like a great idea to get together and bring in our listeners is this whole subject of where are things going with the environment. I mean, when the people who heard the beginning of the show with that song and all those clips from Richard Heinberg and from various thinkers on the matter, Christian Parenti, different political figures and philosophers, about what is happening right now, what we can expect in the immediate future, that's another group of people, and they all came to their view that things are in collapse, that we're really headed for some hard times environmentally, and it looks like economically as well. We're really in the thick of it already. So can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to, and really, what is your viewpoint right now on where we are with the environmental situation, what we're facing in the years coming up here?
Well, my background is that I've been an activist for a pretty long time. I've worked on some local Northern California issues. We were losing the Gravenstein apple, and I was active in that pursuit of saving that apple.
Right, and that's part of biodiversity.
Yes, and I also worked on the failed anti-GMO initiative in my county, which is Sonoma County, California.
Mm-hmm. And the idea behind that was to have an ordinance that genetically modified robotic Frankenstein artificial seed crops would not be allowed to be grown in the Sonoma County in Northern California.
Yeah, in Sonoma County, and it failed, unfortunately. But yeah. I never have stopped being involved in these things. So the Frugal Goddess came out of this, what seems to be an economic depression that is spreading around the United States, has been for a number of years.
Right.
They're calling it a recession, but it's not really.
Right. It's August 2011, so how long has this little brief dip in the economy been going on now?
Well, apparently it started in 07, as far as we know, and probably the groundwork was laid before that in terms of the housing bubble and all of that. But I found myself in a kind of a tight spot, and I realized I'd gotten out of it. I'd learned certain skills in dealing with my material world, and there were some things that actually were happier or more abundant after I became frugal.
Wow.
I actually learned some things about slowing down and enjoying life instead of just pursuing the next material venture. And,
right.
It turned into a pretty good thing. But lately I've been seeing this, maybe it's a collapse, you can call it that. It seems to be that way. Many, many things are getting very shaky out there.
Right.
And it's not just one thing that you could fix. It seems to be endemic through the system.
It isn't just the environment. It isn't just the economy. It isn't just the political situation in Washington.
Yes, that's exact, or any place else for that matter, because this seems to be a fairly global situation that we're in. And I began to think about everything I've read over the last several years about what is actually happening here, and whether you believe in peak oil or you think there is always going to be some oil we can get, it seems clear that the petroleum economy is becoming unstable. The prices are going up, and it's not just the speculators that are running it up on Wall Street, because that's part of it. It's also the actual substance does have a limited quantity.
Right.
And I have a little bit of history with that, too, because of my family does have an interest in the oil business, so I grew up with it. And I was always told this is a limited resource. It's a dwindling resource. That means that there won't be any more of it
right.
in our lifetime, certainly. And we've built a world around petroleum.
Right, right.
But even if there were plenty of oil that would last forever, even if there were an infinite supply, we know now that burning fossil fuels has disrupted our climate in ways that haven't been seen for 12,000 years.
So what do you see when you look at the climate and the signs that you're seeing where things are shifting?
Well, right here where I live, the summers are getting colder, and we're actually having pollination problems because of the lack of bees with certain crops, which is also ties into the overuse of pesticides, and who knows what else has created the hive collapse syndrome. So all of these things kind of go together. But I've been traveling around the rest of the country, just the United States. I can't speak about other countries because I haven't been there yet. But everywhere I went, there were freaky things with the weather. And it's not just like, oh, well, it's things change sometimes and there's patterns and sometimes it gets hotter and sometimes it's cooler.
Right.
Going through the Northwest, what I saw was incredible snowpack that caused flooding and knocked out the fields for many, many, many farmers
right.
across North Dakota and Montana. Like
that Missouri River flooding was melted snowpack was contributing a lot of that.
And some of it was just the snow itself. It wasn't even coming out of a body of water. I said, where is this? What's flooding? And they said the snow is melting. It's just, random flooding.
Yeah.
Just the snow doesn't have anywhere to go, so it landed here and pooled up.
Yeah, and some of the places where it pooled up was around a couple of nuclear power plants.
Yes.
On the Missouri River. And we were looking at a situation. Now, some of you listening may not be aware of this, but earlier this summer, there were two nuclear power plants in Nebraska along the Missouri River that were in incredible danger of being totally immersed in water and having that lead to a meltdown of the kind of proportions that we saw in Japan at the Fukushima plant. Most of the Midwest was underwater all this summer and spring anyway. And actually most of the past year and a half, some portion of the Midwest has been underwater and there have been big tornadoes. So you're referring to that the snowpack that you were there and you were talking to people who were so how were they approaching it? Were they pretty much oblivious to it, or was it they concerned about it?
There are climate deniers all through. They're climate change deniers.
Yeah.
They basically don't want to know that it's happening, so they're saying, oh, this is happening, but it doesn't mean what the scientists say it means. Or they don't even mention science because that's outside of their purview.
Right.
But there's more. After the floods in the last 100 days, the rest of the United States, not my area, but the rest of it, has been under a heat wave that has been causing cattle to drop dead by the hundreds. People have been dying too, but I'm just thinking in terms of our food sources not being available to us.
Right, right. So that's an area where we could be looking at unpredictability.
Food security.
Food security, yes. Yeah. So you have seen, and I want to mention, too, that part of what motivated your trip across the country was not just sightseeing. You were on a trip to talk to people who are being affected, still are being affected, by the economic collapse, which the Great Recession, which is actually another depression, the people who are now being denied their unemployment benefits, who their benefits ran out. So to get their story and to be blogging about that, you have more than one blog. It isn't just The Frugal Goddess.
And so there's the people who are 99ers, as they're called, that have run out of unemployment benefits completely. There are the newly unemployed that have their benefits There are people who lost their house but not their job because their house went underwater. There are people who had small businesses. Nobody's counting the people who had small businesses that were successful for years, and now they lost their business because they lost their customer base.
Yeah.
For instance, an accountant from Arizona who had a very thriving practice, but all his people were in construction, and when the housing market crashed, they all went under, and so did he.
And so here you're taking this trip and you're looking at the economic situation and an economic collapse, which seems to keep on recollapsing. Now there's been all of this, the fear over Europe. Now instead of just banks going under, there are countries going under. The United States is in incredible trouble over, or making a story of being incredible trouble over debt. We are in trouble over debt, but we're not really dealing with it. So it's, what they're playing around, the shenanigans and watching there, in my opinion, just a story. But we'll set that aside. What you are seeing is you're coming back from this trip and you're seeing climate collapse as well. You're
yes.
seeing climate change and starting to put these elements together, and it's looking scary.
Well, I've been aware of this for a long time, but we always say, oh, we have 10 years. You've heard that for the last 30 years. Oh, we have 10 years to fix this. But we're not fixing it. We're going the opposite direction.
Right.
We're making more plastic gigas out of the last little bit of oil that we have left on this planet to do something with.
We're literally hitting sand when it comes to oil.
We're not doing the same thing that an intelligent species would be expected to do under these facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I am looking at this and looking around at my community, which is cold in the summer for the third or fourth time in a row, which wouldn't be any big deal. I mean, there are variations, but when you put it together with the rest of it, and I just began to think, we have a thing called Transition US, which is supposed to be dealing with how we as a people are going to get to the next stage, and that's a very, very good idea. It's so necessary. But to really do it, we have to go a step farther. We have to build strong communities that are small self-help groups that are committed to help each other when it gets tough, because it's already getting tough right now for a lot of people. And if anybody has land where you can put food, if we all help each other build the garden, because gardening isn't something that we're born knowing, and most of us regular city dwellers that have bought our food down at the local supermarket all our lives, we can talk about, oh, we'll just grow a garden when it gets tough, but we don't actually know how to make things grow. We already have the climate change, which is the biggest deal in 12,000 years to contend with, so even good gardeners are going to have problems adapting to the new climate wherever they are.
Right.
But new gardeners that have always had the convenience of a market, we're going to need some help. We need to become self-sufficient again, and we need to do it in small groups. We need elders in the sense of people who have done this before and know how to do it to teach the rest of us. We need people who are willing to put their back into it and people who understand what community means in terms of literally physically helping the other people in the group to prepare us for this.
And getting to know our neighbors now and getting these things, start getting these things in place now so that as things become less predictable, as it gets worse, right? And as things become less predictable, there will be people who know each other and who have laid down some plans for, well, here's some things that we can do. We know what to do. We know who our neighbors are. Here we go. It's time to get started. So now, as far as transition movement, now I do want to give some kudos to the people who started the transition movement a few years ago, several years ago. Actually, even more. I think the transition town movement has been around for maybe a decade. And that in what I've seen in California has been mostly in the area where I live, it's mostly been happening for about maybe 5 years at the most in any of the given areas. And so there are people that are putting their thought into this. They're getting together and having meetings. They're doing some of the reskilling that you're talking about. There are elders talking, showing others how to do canning and things, sewing, things of that nature. There are a lot of lost arts because of our technological culture. So when we start picturing what isn't going to be there anymore, the things that have depended on oil, the things that are dependent on a technological electrical grid, that the grid may or may not be there. So something could put it out. Something could take it out. A weather event could take it out. So tell me a little bit more about how you see things as far as what people are going to be needing to do.
Well, first, literally talk to the other people and understand how important and how desperate this situation is on some level, even if you can't see it yet. There are diseases that take a long time to develop before you see symptoms. We're seeing the symptoms now, but we don't have the end game of the disease yet. We're at the end of Western civilization as we know it because it's built on petroleum products.
Right. We are at the end of Western civilization as we know it because
we need to
it's
do
built
it
on
different.
Petroleum. Well, I think so. We do need to do things differently. So, okay. So another thing I know is that you have had for years involvement in environmental issues. You'd mentioned that about saving the Grabenstein apple, which was great for our, not our biodiversity, but for our genetic diversity of our crops. The Grabenstein apple is a really great fruit that grows very well and very prolifically in certain regions that are friendly to it.
Actually, only three in the world. There's three big stands of Grabensteins, and we have the biggest one right here.
Yeah.
And over the last...
Yeah, in Sonoma County, California.
Oh, 40 years. This used to be apple country. Now it's wine country.
Right. It's turned over into monoculture.
It's a monoculture, and they didn't audit locally, and I'm sure you could do this in your town, wherever you are, or in your county, your region, to see if we have food security right now, whether we can feed the people that are citizens of this place right now, and the answer is no.
Right.
We can't feed everyone. If the Safeway truck doesn't show up, then we're all in trouble right now.
Right.
And I've got a post in the Frugal Goddess about needs as opposed to wants. So the list of needs is pretty simple. I mean, besides air, we need water, we need food, we need some kind of shelter.
Mm-hmm.
We need something to cover our bodies with because we don't have fur like the other animals do. So,
right.
You know, we need to protect ourselves from the elements. And we need some kind of medical care, some way to teach our children how to be adults, an educational system, basically.
Right.
And those are pretty much the only things that hold up as true. And some way to do hygiene, some source of a place to clean and, you know, keep ourselves together that way.
Right.
So potable water and...
Eliminate our waste somewhere.
And some way to deal with the garbage and with cleaning ourselves up. So those are the needs that every person is entitled to as a human being on this planet, as a living thing.
Wow.
We don't necessarily get those because the system as we know it is based only on money. And this is what we call late-stage capitalism.
Ah.
And late-stage capitalism is the worst enemy of actually taking proactive steps to deal with the climate change that we're facing because it doesn't acknowledge it.
Late-stage capitalism.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Late stage is just before it kind of collapses under its own weight.
Yeah.
Because what we're doing right now with the money is not working.
Mm-hmm.
We're not putting our heads together and figuring out how are we going to survive when the climate literally changes. We have no idea what it's going to do.
Right.
We don't know which places are going to be arable land and which ones aren't. We're basically twiddling away doing nothing when the most important thing, the biggest danger, I mean, we've all seen science fiction movies with the alien that comes from outer space or, you know, whatever, but really it's us right here.
That's
we are
right.
The danger. But we're not dealing with it. We're supposed to be smart.
Uh-huh.
Why are we not dealing with the biggest danger to us?
Well, Derek Jensen, there's an author named Derek Jensen who wrote a book, A Language Older Than Words, and he posits the possibility, well, actually he is of the opinion that our Western culture is bent on self-destruction and is actually suicidal. And we're kind of at that point, you know, where organisms, maybe they get overpopulated and the lemmings start going over the cliff, that we're at that stage as well, that we actually don't care anymore. And we don't care if we live or die as a species.
Well, since you mentioned the word die off, you know, everybody talks about, well, everybody in this little, you know, very high-end intellectual community talks about extinction as a possibility, and yes, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
But a big die-off is an even bigger possibility without extinction.
Yeah.
because about a number of years ago, let's say 100 years ago, the population was maybe 2 billion people before we got the petroleum inputs into the agriculture that allowed us to bloom to 7 billion people.
Right.
So,
just from using dynamite for fertilizer.
Yes, and if we take the inputs away because we don't have them anymore, it's going to crash one way or the other. We need to dial it down. We can't support this many people on this planet as it stands without using something that's impossible to use in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sustainable by definition.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion now, is that we dial it down on purpose, but that's not what's happening. It's the whole...
So there's going to be an impact on... I mean, this will bring... impacts and consequences to the human people, to the human population.
Yes, and how it affects you depends on what you're doing right now. To some extent, you do have a little bit of time to brace yourself.
Yeah.
But the ethos of capitalism is endless growth.
Right.
And we can't have that. You know, it doesn't work on this planet.
And there's also a commitment on the part of late stage capitalism to do whatever is necessary and everything possible to make sure that we are that we've got the blinders on, that everything's okay, nothing's ever going to change except you're not going to get Social Security anymore. You know, you're not going to get, you know, we're going to take away your education for your children. But other than that, everything's great. Everything's fine. And there's nothing to worry about in the future.
It's a machine that's programmed to protect itself at all costs.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're not machines and we're not the ones being protected. So one of my projects right now is to get a little group together right here.
If only we were machines.
Yes.
Then we'd have capital value.
Yes, they could just sell us, you know.
We'd be an asset. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, I was saying that my reaction is to try to form a small group of people right here where I live, because it's got to be local. You have to live somewhere and make your stand where you do.
Right.
I mean, figure out where that's going to be. You can think about it a little bit and get there, but I would suggest it be a place where you have a huge amount of social capital as opposed to economic capital, which means that you have your family, your extended family, your friends of many years, the people who care about you, and you care about them, and that's the best basis for a group that I can think of, you know, common values, common interests. That's what we need to very, you know, in a focused way, figure out what we need to learn, what we need to build, what we need to have to brace ourselves for survival here. You don't know in your place what the climate's going to do. It could be that you can't live there anymore because it literally is not livable.
And that's very possible in some parts of the country. I mean, there's
drought.
If you're in a place that has drought all summer and then you're underwater all winter and spring, and then you have these. Maya Angelou said it the clearest for me. She was part of the contingent that was going to Israel. Well, actually, to Gaza to break the blockade that the Israelis had. And just as an offhand remark, she said, you know, there's a lot of things we have to do these days. We have mile-wide tornadoes. Mile-wide tornadoes. And I went, holy cow. She's right. Mile-wide tornadoes. I mean, I was noticing that. I mean, I was looking at the data and there was some news items about it here and there, but grasp that.
It's all
mile-wide tornadoes.
Bigger and scarier. I mean, Katrina was a Type 5 hurricane, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest kind you could have, but they're getting bigger, so they're going to have to up the grade, you know, the way they rate it and have sixes or sevens, class sixes or sevens. You know, I mean, we've never had this before, and there's a thing called a positive feedback loop, which is basically like a vicious circle.
Yeah.
And that's where something that happened over here creates it being worse over there, and the worst thing over there makes it more of the thing that caused it over here, so you can't get out of it. So, you know, basically the carbon is helped by lots of trees, but if you're having global warming, everything gets drier, so you have a bigger forest fire, and that puts more carbon into the atmosphere when it burns.
And bugs move north
to eat
the trees.
Which means that it's harder and harder for the trees to grow more of.
Right, and
so
bugs move north.
So there's a vicious circle
right there. And bugs move north and start eating the trees.
But we live in a world that the actual physical creation beyond humans, if we took us out of it, it would still be this way. It has so many variables. It's a collection of literally millions of feedback loops and little systems that we have no idea how they work, even though we know some of it. We don't know all of it. We're not God. We don't know how to make this thing work. We know how to destroy it, but not how to create it.
Yeah.
So we have a real problem here because we don't even know what we're dealing with. A guy that was a systems theorist, and his name doesn't come to me right now, had this theory that we can only hold about maybe five variables in our minds. We can only keep track of maybe five variables. And we have a system that has literally millions of variables.
Right.
There's no way that we have the comprehension to even come close to doing the right thing. So every time we intercede, we actually usually make it worse. So what we need to do is really go back to a much simpler way of approaching the world, quit making the chemicals, use the precautionary principle, which means that, okay, if I'm right about the climate change, okay, if you're right, the people who are climate change deniers, maybe nothing's going on, it's just everything's fine and dandy.
Right.
So what if we thought maybe there's a problem, so we stopped doing certain things, we dialed it down, we quit putting the chemicals into the system, we cleaned up our environment.
Right.
We
quit blowing the tops off of mountains.
Yes, we quit messing with things and just got our hands off of it and let God take care of it again for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The worst that could happen is that we would maybe have a little less in the way of the plastic form of prosperity that we've been used to for the last, 50 or 60 years since the war. But if I'm right and we don't do anything, it's going to be an absolute unmitigated disaster, and we could go right past die-off to extinction.
Now, we're headed for disaster anyway.
Yes, you can't stop it now.
There's a certain amount of climate change and a certain amount of destruction that's irreversible. I mean, nobody's going to put Fukushima back together again.
It's like stopping an ocean liner. It has no brakes.
Right.
We've gotten too close, too fast to the shore, and it's going to hit. It's a question of how hard it's going to hit and, what can be done to keep it from doing as much damage as it possibly could. So we're into mitigation now and climate change adaptation. We're not going to stop it now. It's too late for that.
So let's say we have this scenario here where let's say we're in California where we're talking together here, but let's say we're in the Midwest where they really they are like I don't know how to describe it, but they're getting just really smashed
by everything
and a juggernaut of water from the melted glaciers and ice caps is just finding other places to fall. And finding other places to show up with some force. I mean, it's amazing how much heavier the winds can become. So they've had the mile-wide tornadoes. Okay, so you're in the Midwest, and you had a winter of being underwater, and now it's like 110 degrees out, and the forecast for next week is 115.
And the cattle are dying.
The cattle are dying off. It's
the
we're running out
of the
older
and younger dying. The older and younger people.
And only those with substantial amounts of money can get their air conditioning to work for more than an hour a day. So this is part of how the scenario starts to look?
Yes.
The food crops are okay. All that monoculture corn is starting to have a bad go of it.
Those places that have been held up by water taken from other places, deserts that never were supposed to support millions and millions of people, are going to be not livable at a certain point because the inputs won't be there. We're not even working on the technology to really do the things we could do to fix this. There should be solar everywhere. It should be free. It should be like a worldwide governmental program to solarize the world. But we're not going to get that, folks, because they don't really know what to do. They're cumbersome. They're messed up. They're too tied in with big business. They aren't going to do this. So
the only conversation right now is about taking all the money and giving it to the rich and to corporations, reducing their taxes so they don't have to pay any, and leaving the rest of us with some kind of a storyline that we are going to have a terrific, successful economy and government without supporting it financially.
And so we need to protect ourselves in whatever way we can. That's part of what the Frugal Goddess was really about. It was about, it wasn't about ever about coupon clipping. It was about changing your approach to your material world so that you knew what you really needed, first of all, what you wanted. And it's okay to have some wants and even to satisfy them. Because we're only on this earth, as far as we know, we only know about this one time. And we have a right to the enjoyment of our lives.
That's a great way to approach things. Can you just hold on just 1 second?
Okay.
I'm going to reintroduce who you are and what we're talking about
for our
listeners. And for those of you who just tuned in, my name is Daniel Kirbein. I'm the host of Shift Shapers, Pole Reversal Radio. And I am talking to Annabelle Asher, who is also known as the Frugal Goddess. And our conversation is about the economic and climate change times that are coming upon us here very quickly. And the benefit of being able to understand things like frugal living, what does frugal living mean in the context of that? And also, what are some other ways that we can be preparing with our neighbors and fellow community members to be able to hold up to the unpredictable state of things, the availability of power or food? Yes, and you were getting... Oh, by the way, and the website is www.frugalplanet.wordpress.com, and we'll get into that at the end as well. So, frugality is more than one thing, isn't it?
Oddly enough, the things that create a frugal life, which is not about cheapness or deprivation, it's about knowing what your values are and getting your values and your needs met at the best price possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also includes cutting the money out of it to some extent, because money, for those of us that aren't in the, you know, upper middle class and above in this country, we're kind of losing that game right now.
Yeah.
We're all stepping backwards. You know, you can feel it. Maybe you have a job, but it's a crappy little job. Maybe you have a good job, but you're worried about losing it. You know, the inflation is putting pressure on all of us. As oil prices go up, so does everything else. So we're going to need to figure something else out here. And I have a couple of things about that. It's once you know yourself and what you need, you can do barter. All of these things also build community. You can make things yourself, do it yourself. You can barter is a really good one because it has to do with you know, not doing the things that you're not that great at and giving something back to somebody else that you are very good at. Like, you make my garden and I'll cook for you is a good one for me because of my skill set. But everybody has a skill set of some kind and something to offer the world. Well, there might be a few people that are damaged enough that's not true, but we should take care of those people just because they exist, and it's the right thing to do. This free rider thing, we won't take care of anybody who's broken, is a pretty cruel example of the problems of late-stage capitalism.
Yeah.
But, so there's those. There's also a thing called the gift economy. What is that, you might ask? Well, the planet runs on the gift economy. The sun gives its light to the plants, which then give production to everything else. I've modeled my frugality on what I call frugal abundance, which is like the earth. It's absolutely abundant. It gives us everything, but it's the most unwasteful thing in the world. Everything gets folded back in. Everything is recycled. If something dies, it becomes fertilizer for everything around it pretty much immediately. So there is no waste in this system. We're the ones who create waste. The humans are like, I say waste, I'm not talking about organic waste because the earth will take care of that. I'm talking about
plastic. It's one of the United States' largest exports is waste.
It's just not good. And then finally, there's what I call, what others have called, and I also call it collaborative consumption, which is sharing, basically.
Okay.
You know,
collaborative consumption.
That's a very fancy $10 word for sharing.
Very good.
We can share tools. We can share you know, media of various kinds. We can share all kinds of things. So I get most of my clothes from clothing exchanges because we get bored. I mean, you know, women especially tend to get bored with it. There is a social component to the clothes thing, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be stylish or beautiful. We're humans, just the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
But how can we do this while not, you know, damaging the rest of the system around us? And there are ways you can actually do it. So when I get bored with my clothes, I take a little bag of them to the clothing exchange, which are held on a regular basis. Anyone could do it.
Oh, and then you can get
and
other
clothes. And then I can get new clothes that are new to me, and somebody else gets the benefit of my stuff that I'm not going to use anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a very direct thing we can do, because post-real collapse, and not, we're in free fall right now, but eventually things will, you know, come together again in however they're going to be in the future after we lose the things we're not going to have anymore. And new ways of living will rise up, hopefully, among those who thought about this ahead of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the big things I always hear over and over again is when I talk about this is, I live out in the country and I've got, 100 acres of land that I can, you know, live on. And, you know, we have a little community already built. But what are we going to do when those other people come from the city, you know, wanting to take away our stuff?
Right.
So this comes up over and over again, and that is a big problem. I can see that. But the knee-jerk reaction is, well, we'll have lots of guns and we'll just, you know, run them off or, you know, roll them under the tundra or whatever, you know, we're going to do with them. But that is not the best solution. I'm trying to think out a more proactive way, like maybe we could trade with them.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how many of them there are.
Yeah. Now, I've had this conversation, this aspect of this conversation with Claudia de la Peña, who is in the transition group in Sonoma Valley, and also with Kate Griffiths, who's a professional mediator and an expert on, very schooled on communication. And actually, what they both concur with is this is the time to be getting to know those, like what you said, those other people. Like I'm using air quotes, folks, those other people. And you all know who the other people are. You might even be one of the other people. I mean, you know, I live in a city. Yes. And I live in a city where actually the most frequently used language is Spanish. The other people, those other people. And one of the things, in fact, Claudia de la Peña was saying, start getting to know the people that you normally, in the neighborhoods where you normally wouldn't want to be after dark. Because when this shift happens, that could be a tremendous, I mean, there's a practical reason, which is this could be a tremendous resource of people with lots of energy and strength to be, and who are generous and hardworking, who would be a tremendous asset to the new community and really don't require much more than anybody else to be part of that. So anyway, I'm going off on this, but I wanted to just add and expound on what you just said, which is, you know, one way is to bunker down and be threatened and hope for the best. And what you're saying is, well take it away.
I would say if people are advancing upon your little patch and your little community and they obviously have evil intention, then by all means, let's have a means of protecting ourselves. We live in the real world, and the more vicious and hard things get, the more vicious and hard people get. That's something that happens.
That's why
we had bank robbers in the last Depression. Because the crime goes up when people don't have enough to eat. That's something that just happens. But we have something to our advantage as people that are not in the top 2% or even the top 20%. The people in the top 2% might actually do fairly well if they can figure out that you can't eat ones and zeros that come through a computer and they get themselves situated right now. But they might be too stupid to do that. I'm not quite sure what they're thinking is not being one of them. But the people on the bottom 20%, our asses are already almost on the ground. Can I say that? Anyhow, our sit bones are as low down as they can go right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a lot further to fall down. We've already learned how to cope with not having enough.
Right.
So we already have systems in place. The community isn't a new community. It's here right now.
Yes.
And transition is an incredible thing. We need that. We need the intellectual basis to hang all of this on. But in the end, dude, you're going to have to pick up a shovel. Because that's the only way we're really going to get through this. And it's what you do right now. You can do it by meeting the people that are a little farther than your immediate next-door neighbors. You can do it by talking about these things with other people and deciding, know where your water comes from and where it could come from if that system fails.
That's excellent.
You know, how are we going to do this? What are we physically going to do to make just the things that are absolutely necessary for us to be here and then hopefully work our way towards some kind of quality of life in the future? And it has to start now, and you can do it very, very simply. It is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one who has to actually make the transition. And I and Daniel here, and each one of us.
That's right. That's right, each one of us. And in what you're saying about the economy, I want to let the listeners know that I'm talking to Annabelle Asher, who is the Frugal Goddess and can be found on Facebook under Frugal Goddess and also www.frugalplanet.wordpress.com, and who also has posted many blogs about the economy and has gone out, done what very few people have done, which is gone out and talk to people who are the 99ers, the people who've gone past the 99 weeks of unemployment benefits and now are making their way whatever they can, and talk to various different people in various parts of the country about how this current economic depression is affecting them. Now, one of the things I do want to ask you is, in your sample, in your conversations, what was the diversity like of the people that you were able to talk to?
It was actually pretty good, mostly because I spent quite a bit of time in the lovely city of Detroit, which I actually love. I didn't know I was going to love Detroit. When I got there, I've got a relative that lives close to there, and she made it easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Detroit's a very interesting place because it's in post-depression at this point.
They're, like, starting to do the things.
They've already been through all of this, and they have wasteland there where, okay, the property values fell so much that the houses weren't worth anything and nobody could live in them because they couldn't eat and live in the house at the same time. It got very, very bad there. So a lot of people left, maybe 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were the foreclosures. You can buy a house free and clear, a foreclosed house, for $100 in Detroit right now.
Wow.
There are pages of this on the internet. It's pretty tempting, actually. I had this fantasy of buying a whole block full, getting together with some nonprofit and raising 50 grand and buying a pretty big neighborhood and putting 99ers in there that could have half ownership in the house, refurbish it and create a community. But then how do you keep that community employed after that?
And so the numbers of African Americans are, there's diversity in that.
There's huge
in those
diversity. And now they're beginning to grow things in the wasteland. There's a whole greening of the wasteland movement.
Mm-hmm. There are people from Mexico there too, right?
Yes, there are people from everywhere. I mean, there's actually a pretty big Mexican-American community, or Spanish-speaking community, that's right up on the Canadian border.
Mm.
The bridge that goes to Canada has what they call Mexican Village right next to it. And there's also a large Arab community there as well.
Fantastic.
Which is, you know, it gives it a very rich. And, the architecture is beautiful. It's 300 years old. It was founded in 1701.
Wow.
So it's a very old city. It's beautifully built, but it was destroyed by not by famine or disease or nothing happened there except the money stopped working.
And
now we see what happens when the money stops working.
Yeah.
But the people are still the same people they were before, and now artists are coming from other places because it's cheap. They got run out of Manhattan and San Francisco, but Detroit is still affordable. And some people that were the best and the brightest Detroiters went to college and, you know, got their PhDs in other places, and now they're bringing it on back home.
Wow.
So you have people coming back to Detroit to give something back to that community because the people who love it really do love it.
Mm-hmm.
And they
have
a huge market called the Eastern Market that's a food mart that's like 4 blocks long. And you can get anything there, but a lot of it's locally grown. And then you can get, if you're on food stamps, you can trade for Eastern Market scrip, and it doubles your food stamp money, but you have to spend it on local products.
So it's like a local currency in a way.
It is. They've got some systems that they're working on, you know?
Yeah.
We could actually all take a little lesson from that town.
Terrific, terrific. And you've been blogging about this.
Oh, yes.
So people can find that at www.frugalplanet.wordpress.com, or is there another site?
There's another site. It's called Annabelle Travels.
Okay.
Also at WordPress.
AnnabelleTravels.
Yes, and that is Annabelle's Odyssey is the name of the blog.
Okay.
And it's just about my travels. I'm going to continue to do this because one of the problems that I have had in the past is getting people that have lost everything to talk about it because they are embarrassed and ashamed, even though it's not their fault. And I'm just getting enough juice to get them to talk to me. It's taken 6 months now of going out there and writing, and, you know, I will anonymize. If you want to tell me your story, if you were doing great 5 years ago and now you live in a cardboard box, I won't put your name in there unless you give me permission.
Right.
I just want to tell the story, that's all.
And it's an important story to be told. And you are bringing ideas that are of value that people can use, not only through getting familiar with what's being done in other communities and what people are going through, so we're not all alone with this, but also advice, Frugal Goddess advice. So I want to thank you, Annabelle Asher, the Frugal Goddess, for joining us here on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. I am your host, Daniel Kerbein, and I am without my co-host, Evelina Molina, on this particular installment of the show. You can find this at www.blogtalkradio.com. Look for Shift Shapers, and we also have a and once you get there and you go to our Facebook page of Shift Shapers on Facebook, there are links there to all the other crazy things we do, the blog, the podcast, all of it. And so I want to thank you, Annabelle, for joining us.
Thank you, and thank all of you out there, and I hope to see some of you online.
For just one day, I want to break all regulations, because we all go the same way, and we all pass the same stations. For just one day, I want to feel totally free. No responsibilities, just everything is okay. No desires, just surviving is the key. Surviving is the key. Surviving is the key. Surviving is the key. Surviving is the key.
We're all walking around with 148 toxic compounds in our tissue at any moment. A baby born in Birmingham or Boston or Bend, Oregon this morning has 287 chemical compounds in her tissue.
The reality is that we've gone so far out on a limb that it's going to be a difficult process adjustment. We have some hard times ahead of us.
The real evil of our time is not this individual hot evil we continue to concentrate on, despite the real suffering it causes, but rather a cold evil.
And unless we begin to make efforts now to reinforce our satellites and power grid, we could have something maybe 10 times bigger than Katrina. I'm talking about the loss of all electricity and all satellite activity. We'd be thrown 100 years back into the past.
I want to ignore a senseless fate. Colors are victorious over the gray. Start to get controlled by the state. For just one day, I wanna forget the value of money and gold. I wanna live life my way and lose my inhibition threshold.
We're talking about a potential Katrina from outer space. T-12, we do expect perhaps another big one.
We are facing a kind of wall here.
Short circuit all the transformers and blow out the satellites and fry the communications grid. Then you're talking about knocking out the United States for months before we can get enough rescue crews and repairmen. Handle not just one city, but hundreds of cities around the United States.
This is what we have to expect. Unemployment, homelessness, bank failures, hunger, crime, political instability, and international conflict.
So the Earth shifted 3 inches as a consequence of that 8.8 earthquake. The day is no longer 24 hours. It's been shortened by 1 microsecond. That's how...
For just one day,
What's going on here is nothing less than the fruit being born of a diabolic but truly magnificently orchestrated colonization effort of our country and our world.
So we're going to actually see more of this kind of seismic activity, more volcanoes, more swings in the weather. We wiped out with simultaneous blackouts in 100 cities.
Danger zone where we may have already triggered self-fueling processes like the melting of the permafrost.
We're talking about a potential Katrina from outer space.
So we really don't have a lot of time.
Just surviving is the key. Surviving is the key. Surviving is the key. Surviving is the key.